The Local Administration, Federal Affairs, and Special District Subcommittee meeting will now come to order. Tamara, please call the roll.
Chairperson Smoleka.
Here.
Vice Chair Brackett.
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Daley. Representatives Amnesty.
Here.
Anderson excused. Bartleman. Barrera.
Here.
Dunkley.
Here.
Gottlieb. Griffiths.
Here.
Holcomb.
Here.
Schock.
Here.
McLean.
Here.
Flaken.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Woodson.
Yeah.
Yarkowski.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. Members, welcome back. I know you thought last week might have been our last subcommittee meeting, but you never know. I wanted to bring before you three great bills for your consideration, and so we have just a little more work to do this morning. First, we will take up House Bill 413 by Chair Altman, Public Meeting and Workshops for Regional Advisory Committee. Representative, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to thank the committee for getting up early for this 8:30 meeting so we could have another meeting. House Bill 413 would allow volunteers and regional advisory committees to participate and perform advisory functions in meetings and workshops by electronic means, and I do have a strike-all amendment.
Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, Representative Altman, you're recognized to present strike-all barcode 571197.
Thank you. This clarifies the intent of the bill to apply to citizen volunteer advisory committees created to provide technical expertise and support to the National Estuary Program established by Congress under Statute 320 of the Clean Water Act. Some of these committees are very large geographic areas, and these are just volunteers, and it's very difficult to get them to meet. This would help facilitate some of the technical input that they need to meet the federal law.
Members, any questions on the amendment? See no questions. Do we have public comment on the amendment? Is there anyone present wishing to speak on the amendment? See no one. We're in debate. Debate on the amendment. Chair Altman, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Wave close.
Having waived close, please show amendment barcode 571197, adopted without objection. Members, we're back on the bill as amended. Is there public comment on the bill? Eric Keene, representing Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Florida. Are you here this morning? Would you like to speak or? Oh, yes, it was filled out for House Bill 413. We'll make sure that we have a proper appearance card. We might need you to fill out another one when we get to the other item. Thank you. Is there anyone in the public wishing to speak on this matter? Seeing no one, members, we're in debate. Any debate? Seeing no debate. Chair Altman, you're recognized to close.
Waive close, Madam Chairman.
Having waived close, Tamara, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrera?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Daley?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Schock?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Flaken?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chairperson Smoleka?
Yes.
16 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, please show House Bill 413 reported favorably.
Thank you very much.
Next, we will take up PCS for House Bill 1547 by Chair McClure, Local Government Actions. Chair, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jonathan II, good morning. Last session, we passed a bill to require local government, just like us, and state agencies to review the fiscal impact statements of new ordinances. That law also established timeframes for expedited judicial review of arbitrary and unreasonable ordinances. We exempted certain ordinances, like ones passed to deal with an emergency and those related to growth management. Unfortunately, since last session, we've seen some stuff relating to land use ordinances, and these actions may even infringe on some property rights. So this bill goes to kind of cleaning that up from last year. That is a bill, Madam Chair.
Members, any questions? Seeing no questions and no amendments, we are in public comment. First up, Bob McKee, Florida Association of Counties. Mr. McKee, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Bob McKee with the Ford Association of Counties. I want to thank Rep. McClure for making his office available to discuss, and we look forward to having more conversations about our concern about the bill with the sponsor. On this, I think Rebecca O'Hare and the League of Cities will talk in a moment about some of the specific land use provisions and some of the problems that she's much more skilled at getting into specifically. What I want to talk about is just some of the general overlay. When we worked this bill the last 2 years, we were concerned about some areas, the way the business impact requirement would overlay with certain areas, the way that the legal process established in last year's Senate Bill 170 would overlay, particularly with the growth management, the Part 2 of Chapter 163, that the time frames and other things just did not match up well with the way that section worked. Additionally, my background is an economist, and so when we looked at the amount of information, what was necessary to conduct those analyses as we were looking at ordinances, the growth management area is much more complex in that area. Comprehensive plan changes may affect many landowners, both positively and negatively, and being able to do a comprehensive analysis on all those impacts will be very challenging. Last year, there was a lot of testimony that local governments would not have to hire consultants in order to meet this burden. We are afraid with this requirement being added to us, that will no longer be the case, that there will be a lot of additional requirements to meet the standards that are laid out. And we are also concerned that as we are only 4 years into the implementation, that why we have to change at this point, why not let this continue to operate, function, and work? And then we can look backwards to see whether it's working well or not. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you for being here. Rebecca O'Hara, Florida League of Cities. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, committee members. I'm Rebecca O'Hara with the Florida League of Cities. And as Chair McClure indicated, Senate Bill 170 passed in the last session does require the business impact statement to be prepared for a number of ordinances and also establishes this expedited timeframe for addressing legal challenges. The other thing that this bill did is that when a legal challenge is filed, it requires the ordinance in question to be suspended by the local government and not enforced during the pendency of that lawsuit. And that's really significant for the reasons I'm going to get into in just a minute. Because the amendment in front of you today narrows an existing exemption from those requirements addressing land use. Specifically, what it does is that no longer exempt from the business impact statement requirement or the lawsuit and suspension requirement I just mentioned, no longer exempt would be the adoption of comprehensive plan amendments, which are adopted by ordinance, or the adoption of a land development regulation, which is also adopted by ordinance. So unlike regulatory types of ordinances, which was ostensibly the objective of Senate Bill 170 from 2023, and by conduct regulations, what I mean are things like regulating hours of operation of a business or prohibiting the use of certain materials within the jurisdiction of the municipality or county, such as plastic bags or straws or things of that nature. So unlike those regulatory types of ordinances, a comprehensive plan amendment and a land development regulation implements requirements of state law. State law requires every local government to adopt a comprehensive plan and update it periodically to reflect changing conditions, including population projections. Land development regulations, in turn, implement the comprehensive plan with more specificity. So land development regulations are typically requirements establishing things like transportation concurrency, water and sewer concurrency, flood hazard requirements, street closures, street dedications, connections to public roads, subdivisions and platting, zoning, stormwater permits, well field protection regulations, and septic to sewer connections. So So the reason why we stand in opposition to this amendment today is the collateral damage that will result if this becomes law. For example, this sets up a potential conflict with existing law. There are statutes that address the comprehensive plan amendment and challenge process, as well as land development regulations. For example, Section 163.3184 states that it is the exclusive method to challenge comprehensive plan compliance with state law. There are specific timeframes for bringing an action to challenge a plan amendment. And more importantly, by law, a local government has only 180 days to finalize the amendment and adopt it, or it is deemed withdrawn. The reason why that is significant is that this exemption and the removal of comp plan amendments and land development regulations from it will establish a collateral process, a legal process, to challenge a plan amendment or a land development regulation. It is highly unlikely that a circuit court in a legal challenge to an ordinance will resolve that question of law within 180 days. So it sets up a scenario where a state mandated requirement cannot be met because of the operation of a collateral lawsuit. Similarly, Section 163.3213 establishes a process for challenging a land development regulation's consistency with the comprehensive plan and with state law. So the effect of this essentially will encourage anti-competitive and NIMBY types of actions by creating an alternative avenue for persons opposed to a plan amendment or a land development regulation to challenge it and hold up its effectiveness for an indeterminate period of time. Some of the examples that might arise, and this in fact was the reason for this exemption being put into Senate Bill 170 in the first place, was to prevent things like shopping malls from challenging a comprehensive plan amendment for an Amazon distribution center, or a neighborhood group challenging an accessory dwelling unit regulation intended to allow affordable housing in a residential area, or perhaps a restaurant challenging a land development regulation establishing locations and zones for food trucks. Lastly, this would also allow a neighborhood group or a person to challenge a plan amendment that would authorize a private school in a residential area. These are just a few examples of what could occur. This will also inhibit, as I mentioned, the implementation of state-mandated comprehensive plans and land development regulation updates. These are things that this legislature, in the last legislative session, recently required local governments to do, and I'll give you two examples. First of all, last year in the 2023 session, there was legislation that directed local governments to amend their comprehensive plans to support floating solar facilities. Similarly, last year, legislation directed comprehensive plan amendments that would establish policies for septic to sewer conversion of areas with 50 or more homes where it is feasible. This is necessary to address abundant water quality problems in this state. So remember, the local ordinance legislation from 2023 authorizes any person to file a civil action to challenge the ordinance on the basis that it is arbitrary or unreasonable. It doesn't have to be a business to challenge it. It can be anybody. It doesn't even require a person to establish legal standing prior to the ordinance being rendered ineffective and unenforceable. The plan amendment has to be adopted within 180 days, and as I mentioned, this could be a significant problem for us in complying with state law. As Mr. McKee mentioned, Senate Bill 170 became effective on October 1st of 2023. It's essentially been in place for only 4 months. Our objective at the Florida League of Cities is to determine what the issue is here that we're trying to address. Once we've identified the problem, and we will continue our discussions with Chair McClure in this regard, once we've identified the problem, our objective is to help address that problem without creating the collateral damage that I mentioned. But at the moment, we remain opposed to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Doug Bell, City of Ormond Beach, waves in opposition. John Booker, representing Volusia County, waves in opposition. David Collin, representing the Sierra Club, waves in opposition. And Kimberly Dinkins, representing 1,000 Friends of Florida, waves in opposition. Is there anyone else present this early morning wishing to speak on this matter? Seeing no one, members, we're in debate. Do we have debate on the bill? Ranking Member Daly, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I do. I have great respect for the sponsor. But if there is one thing I hate more than 8:30 committee meetings, it is bad policy at 8:30 committee meetings. And that's where I'm at on this bill. I don't understand. And I went off a couple weeks ago when we had a similar situation. There was a bill that was brought before this committee. For some reason, there was a compromise on a previous bill that used to mean something in this building. I stick my neck out all the time to try and help and foster compromise, although my rating from the Florida Chamber would say otherwise. So I don't understand. We have an agreement on something, and it used to mean something. We would leave it alone for a couple of years. If somebody filed a bill in that same arena of policy, we wouldn't touch it. We wouldn't even hear the bill. We'd say the legislature dealt with this. We're done. We got too much stuff going on. We'll deal with it down the road in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Now that means nothing. And so we're coming back, and we're redoing this. We're getting all the stuff that was agreed to last year, right? The stuff we were able to hold off, and that's what this bill does. I don't think some folks understand the implications of this bill. The developers and the cities should be unified. This means that anybody with any Yahoo with $400 and a grudge against the local government can file a lawsuit and stop development, can stop ordinances, can stop anything like that. And it blows my mind that we do this year after year. So with all due respect to the sponsor, I hope we can work together on this, but I am just so frustrated with this process this year because this is not the first time I've seen it. I'm sure it won't be the last. But guys, we have to stop doing this. And I am going to be so down today. So thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Members, any additional debate? Well, I will round out Ranking Member Daly's comments to submit a little different perspective. I want to thank the chair for bringing forward a bill and remind the committee members this is just the first stop. So there may be some things that need to be worked on and tweaked. But here we're talking about ensuring that there's accountability with our local elected officials to the residents and the people that they represent. And where they pass an arbitrary or unreasonable ordinance, this permits an additional avenue to challenge. Very limited. Either the ordinance is preempted by state law or the Constitution, or the ordinance is arbitrary or unreasonable. We have an expedited court process. This will not impact development orders, which are specific rezonings, variances, special exceptions, et cetera, for properties. It doesn't impact development permits, but it's looking at those ordinances, the regulations that local governments pass that could be and are challenged for being arbitrary and unreasonable. So thank you for looking to protect folks from that action on the local level. Unfortunately, there have been actions that lead to this bill being necessary. And with that, Chair McClure, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you just closed for me. I do have a couple of kind of things that I want to say. First and foremost, Representative Woodson, I apologize. She and I had tried to connect yesterday. She sent some questions past my bedtime last night, and I didn't see them until after. So we'll talk later today on the floor. I want to make sure that we get those answered. Representative Daly, I do want to have it on the record, and, you know, we're dear friends. I wasn't a part of the conversations last year. I often get frustrated with tinkering with things before they've really gone into full effect. But I do think, going to the chair's point here, sometimes we do have to tweak some stuff, and would love to continue to talk to you about ways to make the bill a little better. Madam Chair, thanks for your co-sponsorship. It's fantastic. With that, I close.
Chair McClure, having closed on the bill, Tamara, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Bartleman?
No.
Barrero?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Daly?
No.
Dunkley?
No.
Gottlieb?
No.
Griffiths?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Shock?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Clayton?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Woodson?
No.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chairperson Smolicka?
Yes.
11 yeas, 5 nays.
By your vote, please show PCS for House Bill 1547 reported favorably. Next, we will take up House Bill 1351 by Representative Escamani and Representative Saltzman. compensation for advising or assisting in veterans' benefits. Representative Escamani, you are recognized to present the bill.
Well, thank you so much, Chairwoman Persis Malika, Vice Chair Brackett, and of course, Ranking Member Daly for allowing us to agenda and hear this bill today. Federal laws and regulations prohibit anyone from assisting a veteran in the preparation, presentation, or prosecution of a VA benefit claim or charging a fee for this assistance that is exorbitant in nature without accreditation from the VA's Office of General Counsel. However, the VA and other federal agencies are limited in their ability to enforce existing law because explicit criminal penalties were actually stripped from federal law nearly two decades ago. This has contributed to the proliferation of unaccredited claims representatives, also known as claim sharks, in recent years. This legislation will discourage these types of predatory companies from operating outside the bounds of federal law and will give the state an additional tool to protect veteran claimants from predatory practices. It should be noted that these claim sharks charge veterans for services that are provided free of charge by organizations like the American Legion, VFW, local VSOs, and so many other nonprofit and state partners that are accredited. However, the intention of this bill is to ensure that organizations that are not accredited cannot offer services with exorbitant fees, sometimes 5 to 6 months of a veteran's benefits. And so they must be done within the confines of federal law and soon, hopefully, a state law. Our veterans protect us and our freedoms, and now we can help protect them, their families, and their financial futures from being defrauded with the passage of this bill. I want to give a very special thank you to Representative Salzman, who is my prime co, for her leadership on this, and of course the VFW, the American Legion, alongside other FSOs for their insight and support. This bill actually was provided to us in part by the VFW. And that, Madam Chair, is the bill that we do have a short amendment just to replicate the Senate bill and make a small change for stakeholders.
Members, any questions on the bill? Vice Chair Brackett, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Escamani, thank you for your time yesterday. I know we spent some time together in my office talking over this bill, trying to make sure I understood it. Not you. You did understand it. Make sure I understood it. My question to you is, we talked about a path for accreditation for the companies that are not accredited right now. Is that available currently? Is there a path for them to become accredited?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. An excellent question, Vice Chair. Yes, there is. The pathway to accreditation requires about a 40-hour training, a background check, and then a test. Now, speaking to many of our stakeholders, there can be a backlog to getting accredited. So we did discuss an amendment in the future to expand the requirement timeline. As currently the bill goes into effect upon signature, I do think a good compromise could be to extend that timeline just to provide a little bit more of an on-ramp, if you will. But an accredited organization can still charge fees as well. The VA in federal code does have a fee schedule, but the intention is that you're not being predatory in your practice or charging exorbitant fees.
Vice Chair, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so that was my second question. Would you consider an amendment to extend the starting date of this bill instead of making it effective immediately?
You're recognized.
And you answered it, I think.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Absolutely. Happy to do that.
Representative Tuck, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for the conversation this morning. I really appreciate it. My question is, what's kind of the rationale for how this bill came about? Is there a specific situation? Is there a culmination of situations? What does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and I might pass to Rep. Salzman to add more to that question. Excellent question. So the bill actually first came to me after I spoke to a Sarasota-based veterans organization, and they brought this issue to me as a concern for them because it's always been a problem, but with the PACT Act, it's getting worse because more of these predatory for-profit companies have popped up seeing dollar signs with our veterans. And so we worked on a bill which got us connected to the VFW, and in fact, the VFW at the federal level has been working to pass a National Guard VA benefits policy. Unfortunately, some of these claim shark organizations have heavily lobbied Congress. In fact, one in particular has already spent more than $1.5 million lobbying Congress, and it's created a stall. And we all know that Congress can't get things done these days anyways. So the VFW has turned to a state-by-state strategy and really trying to empower legislative bodies like ours to put some sort of protections in place. And this is not a criminal penalty, it's civil. So we're not creating a criminal offense for anyone, but we are trying to ensure that you're following federal law. Because at the end of the day, these organizations, they're not operating legally. And the problem is the federal government doesn't have teeth to stop them. So this would help our Attorney General have those tools. And in fact, Attorney General Ashley Moody, alongside other AGs, have supported the federal version of this in a bipartisan manner. And I'll pass over for additional comments.
You're recognized.
Oh, thank you. I love your blouse, by the way. So back to Representative Tuck's question. What has led to this? I think the PAC Act is a good example. So basically, matter of fact, fun information for you. I sound bad, but not because I have a cold, but because I have sinusitis from where I used to do what we call crap burning detail when I was deployed, where we would literally burn poop and then we would inhale it. And now people like me have this issue. So the PAC Act just came out a couple of years ago. The VA said, oh my gosh, we poison these people's, you know, bodies and we need to make sure we take care of them. Hey, veterans, if you go online and apply, we will not only provide you with a pathway to get compensation and disability for this, but we'll also give you back pay up to 2 years because we recognize we should have done this a long time ago. So then organizations that make money off of claims such as Social Security and veterans claims, they say, ooh, this is my opportunity. So then they get a good marketing strategy and they do search engine optimization and they target veterans in the community. So when you go to look up how to apply for the PAC Act, you're going to a shark instead of the VA. So you're not even given the opportunity as a general citizen unless you walk into a veterans organization or a veterans clinic to do it the way that it's designed to do. And by the way, it takes 5 minutes to apply online for the PAC Act. 5 minutes. You go in, you log in. Every veteran has a login. That's how we get everything we need with the VA. And you literally click a button. But these organizations are out there preying on folks that don't understand the process. And they end up getting 5, 6, 7 months of back pay, sometimes even more. And guys, back pay could be $200,000+ because the way the Veterans Association does it, just like the Social Security Administration, you get it from the time you filed. So if a veteran is having issues being approved, even if it's denied, they're still going to be able to get all the money that was owed to them. That is standard practice in the VA. But if you don't know that as a 70-year-old World War II veteran or whatever, you Google it or you find whoever, you see a sign, a billboard, and you call it, and you automatically think you have to use an attorney. And these attorneys are not accredited, so they're able to manipulate the system in a way where you get the most money, but that's so they can get more money in return. I hope that answered your question. This is very frustrating for me, that the fact that they get to take advantage of veterans. So,
members, any additional questions? We have an amendment. Representative Escamani, you are recognized to present amendment barcode 975493.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you to the staff who helped craft this amendment. This amendment is just matching the Senate version, which already passed its first committee unanimously. But essentially, we want to make sure we didn't unintentionally capture public agencies that are also providing services to veterans for free. So it just removes a few words from the definition of a veterans benefits matter organization and what a person means. So just to be more specific, governmental subdivision, agency, or instrumentality is removed.
Members, any questions on the amendment? See no questions. Do we have public comment on the amendment? Is there anyone present wishing to testify on the amendment? Members, we're in debate on the amendment. Any debate? Representative Escamani, you're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Representative Escamani, having waved close, please show amendment barcode 975493 adopted without objection. We are back on the bill as amended. Do we have public comment? We have quite a few appearance cards. Thank you all again for being with us here this morning. First up, Peter O'Rourke, representing the National Association for Veteran Rights. You're recognized.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and thank you for allowing me to come and speak in opposition to this bill. As was stated by the bill's sponsor, this bill will change what currently is in practice at the VA. My name is Peter O'Rourke, and I am not just the president of the National Association for Veterans Rights, but I was the chief of staff of the VA in 2018 and the acting secretary. So I can tell you that this bill at the state level is an interruption of a process that is going on to try to figure out how can we do our best for veterans. Because right now, if you're a veteran, and whether it's a PACT Act, which most companies don't even know how to process because the VA doesn't know how to process those, hence why we have a growing 400,000-plus case backlog at the VA. But we also have an inventory of roughly 3 million cases each year of claims of veterans that have put in their claim initially to try to get, whether it's PACT Act designation, whether it's just to get their initial claim adjudicated, and they get to wait, or they get some assistance that helps them put in their claim at the last minute before their 1 year of notice of a determination is made, and then they get to have it denied, and they get to go the appeals process. Where, which you're not being told by folks here, is where lots of people get paid to help a veteran get their claim done. What we represent at the association are companies that about 8 years ago decided this is not a good process. Veterans should have their claims done correctly the first time on their initial claim side. And they were not finding the help to get that done correctly. Because right now, there's a perverse incentive to do an appeal. There's lots of people. The trial bar is very intent on veterans maintaining these appeals processes because that's where they take 30-plus percent of their back pay. Doing initial claims for free sounds like a great opportunity. And in some cases, it works great. And veteran service organizations have done a great job at helping veterans with simple claims. If you're a veteran without a simple claim, you get to wait. You get to wait for years. And then once you finally get your back pay after getting denied, been denied by the VA a few times, then you get to give away 30 to 35% of that to somebody that helped you through that process. The members of the National Association for Veteran Rights got together late last year to decide we've got to change this. There are bad actors out there. We need to find them, deal with them, do what the VA would not do, what even others in this whole ecosystem would not do, which is clean up that area. So we stepped forward to say we're going to do that. We set standards. We certify the companies to provide good service for a fee, a reasonable fee, and veterans chose to take those services. And for some reason, that seemed to upset the apple cart or upset the system to where then people started coming out and saying, you're claim sharks, you're taking advantage of veterans, you're targeting them. I'm sorry, that's not what these veteran-owned companies that are mostly employed veterans, veteran spouses, veteran children are doing. This bill inadvertently shuts them, in some cases, down. It impacts them and impacts their ability to help veterans do what they do for veterans every day. This is a misguided bill. Yes, they referred to there as work in Congress. Yes, there is a stalemate because those that want to not let this process change want these criminal penalties that came out in 2006 because what you're not being told is they came out in 2006 because there were no veteran advocates at that point. You go back and look at the numbers, very few people wanted to help veterans back then because of criminal penalties. Why try to help somebody and then say, well, now you can go to jail for it? The minute those were stripped away, you had more than 15,000 accredited agents become part of that system. The problem is that now we're going swung all the way the other way, and we have this whole system where we can get paid if we help veterans with their appeals. I say we help veterans on their initial claims, get them done correctly, and if a veteran wants to choose to hire a service, just like if they were doing their taxes, just like if they're going to court, they should have that right to choose. This bill takes that away from them. It takes options away from them that they choose to employ. Are there bad actors? Yes, we're addressing that, but this bill does not address that. It certainly doesn't address PACT Act claims, that none of our member companies even address. And frankly, I wouldn't want to get in that backlog either. So I do agree that something has to be addressed. Can it be addressed at the state level? Not with this bill. So I thank you for your time. I appreciate it, and I stand opposed to the bill. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Eric Keene, representing the Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Florida. I put the correct bill in your appearance card. You're good to go, and you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, committee, this early morning. My name is Eric King, and I'm the Director of Legislative Affairs for the Veterans of Foreign Wars of the Department of Florida. The VFW unanimously endorses HB 1351, and we thank Reps Escamani and Salzman for bringing it forward. A significant number of our 60,000 VFW members here in Florida seek help in filing claims with the VA. So we are very aware of the processes and indeed some of the shortcomings and delays. What we're also very aware of is the number of unaccredited predatory claim sharks who excessively overbill thousands of dollars for their services. Many states now have begun to ban them. In fact, a bipartisan coalition of 44 states' attorneys general, including Florida, agrees with the VFW. These unaccredited predatory groups aggressively advertise online and often make promises to increase the disability ratings. Some charge thousands of dollars of fees in their services. Some have even requested VA login credentials to track when veterans receive future rating increases and then return seeking more money. Sadly, there are many more companies out there, and they can be found all over social media, seeking veterans and surviving military spouses who then unknowingly enter into agreements that result in significant reduction of their benefit due to excessive fees. But there are also many professionals accredited by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs who help veterans, and they do not bill for their services. There are VA-accredited employees working for the veterans organizations like the VA, VFW, the DA, DVA, DAV, excuse me, and others, which have been doing benefit claims free of charge for many decades. There are also VA-accredited attorneys that do great work, and they charge in accordance with 38 CFR 14.636. Other lawyers handle lawsuits for issues like contaminated water at Camp Lejeune, and they operate within federal guidelines. The VFW simply asks for oversight. We ask that those who assist veterans with their benefit claims become accredited, and that when they enter an agreement with a veteran, it is with the veteran's full knowledge and understanding of the true and total cost. The VFW therefore asks that you unanimously support HB 1351 so that we can protect veterans and their loved ones. Again, I thank Reps Escamani and Saltzman for our, and our supporters for championing this important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Owen Russell. Mr. Russell, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank Representative Escamani and Representative Saltzman for sponsoring this bill. I am a U.S. Marine veteran, U.S. Air Force veteran, and I'm a member of the International Association of Machinists Aerospace Workers that work at for United Launch Alliance in Cape Canaveral in Space Force Station. So that being said, our international thought this was so important that they created a department in the international to any member to apply for veterans benefits as a benefit for being in the union. And this is the kind of thing we're looking for. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. David Jimenez, representing himself, waves in support. Joel Luna, waves in support. Helen Dowd, waves in support. Claudette Wells, waves in support. John Castle, waves in support. Richard Gilland, waves in support. And Karen Murillo, representing the AARP, waves in support. Thank you for being here. Is there anyone else present wishing to testify on this matter? That concludes public comment. Members, we are in debate. Is there debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, representatives, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would like to thank everyone today for coming, for the questions of the from the committee, as well as for the hard work that Representative Escamani has put into this legislation. She was really passionate when she called me and told me about it. And I said, you know, I understand this lane. I've been in it for 20 years as a volunteer through veterans organizations in my local community. I've been helping veterans for a long time get their disabilities or apply for disabilities or find the avenue to get their disability claims completed. So I just want to mention briefly some false things that were stated from some public comment. And you can actually look all of this up yourself. It's interesting because I got some emails from opposition, and I replied and said, well, gosh, where are you getting this data? Show me why this is so important. Why I and they don't know that I'm the sponsor. They didn't read it. They just clicked the button. I said, show me why I shouldn't vote for this bill. And so they send me the VA website, benefits.va.gov, to tell me, to show me the backlog of claims. Guys, it's 5 months average to wait for a VA claim on the VA website, 5 months. A lot of us, when we try to go to a doctor, it takes 5 months. And to get a VA claim processed, you have to see various specialists. Yet they have to go through the process of doing their physical exams, all of the testing, the labs, the x-rays, all that stuff. And they're getting it done in 5 months on average. He mentioned that we have 3 million backlog. That's 6%. Don't you wish we were that efficient in the operations that we provide? Now, I'll tell you, I will be the first to say the federal VA has got a lot of problems. That's why I'm so active in this space. Absolutely. They don't do it right all the time. They don't do it right a lot of the times. But this bill isn't about whether they get it right or get it wrong. This bill is about empowering people that are doing the right thing to help our veterans. Another thing I wanted to mention, he said there was criminal charges. We made this very clear. It is no criminal charges. The VFW endorses this bill, and some organization that just showed up a few years ago is saying that they are the authority in this, and I would beg to differ. We all have industries that we work in and we volunteer in, and we don't always agree. Even our parties don't always agree when we're inside talking to one another. So just because one organization says it's bad doesn't make it bad. It just means we need to review it and make sure that we're doing the best we can for everybody and get in that middle ground. This bill provides middle ground. It doesn't say that you cannot get paid to help veterans. You can still get paid to help veterans, but you have to be an accredited member. Guys, if you're not accredited, that means I can create a nonprofit ID. I can put it on the website. I can put it on Google, pay $100 for search engine optimization, and then you call me and tell me you need me to help you file your claim. Now I have your social security number. I have your date of birth. I have your address. I have your maiden name. I have your time in service. And all I know is I saw it online and I thought you were real. We should not be empowering random people to create a process in which they get your private information. This is a great tool in the toolbox to help veterans. It does not limit access to claims. And one final thing, it took me 5 months to finish the PAC Act claim. It did not take me many years. I wish people would be a little bit more honest about their presentations. And with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Representatives Eskamani and Saltzman having closed on the bill. Tamara, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Gottlieb? Griffith?
Yes.
Holcomb?
Yes.
Schock?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Clayton?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chairperson Smolicka?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, please show House Bill 1351 reported favorably.
Thank you. Let's do it again, members.
Well, members, that concludes our agenda for today, as this very likely could again be our last subcommittee meeting. I was remiss that I didn't open up to the members for any comments at our last meeting. Is there anyone who would like to share any remarks before we conclude? Ranking Member Daly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I've said more than enough today for our 8:30 a.m. meeting. But I just want to thank you for your leadership and the committee's team, staff. They do an excellent job. And while I may not love every piece of legislation that comes through the committee, I appreciate your willingness to let us have that open dialogue, to ask questions, to debate, to do all those things, and for members to be able to work their bills, right? I mean, that's so much of this process is actually legislating and actually working your bills, whether it's good or whether I think it's good or bad. I really appreciate that opportunity and your leadership, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Vice Chair Brackett, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my hat goes off to the staff and for your leadership and what you've done, but the staff has done a wonderful job. As someone who is very new to the process, sitting on this panel up here. I appreciate all the help they gave me and the direction they gave me and the guidance, and so I just want to make sure that they are thanked for that.
Yep. Thank you, Vice Chair, for those comments. Members, any additional comments? Well, again, it has been a pleasure to serve with you all on this subcommittee. I look forward to continuing that service, and I want to conclude by again thanking our amazing staff for everything they've done this session. As you all have seen, we have a huge workload that comes through this subcommittee, but they make it look easy. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And with that, Representative Brackett moves, we rise, and without objection, we are adjourned.